A faith stronger than Christianity? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And it's good to be back with you, Barry, as we have a rare treat that you and I rarely get to do, and that's to be in studio face-to-face looking at each other, each of us with a computer screen on so we can know what we're talking about, so we don't have to guess when the next guy's going to hop in and say something.
Now, first of all, let's clear up a couple of fallacies in that comment that you just made. First of all, I think I'm the one who has the pleasure of looking at something that's worth looking at. And secondly, what makes you think that me staring at a computer screen is going to make me not be wrong about something?
Well, yeah, let's not go there.
Okay. Okay. Well, considering that, I'm glad we segued with that because we were a little wrong about something yesterday's program, and we want to clarify that today. As listeners know, we talked a little bit yesterday about the habitable exoplanet catalog that researchers at the Puerto Rico Arecibo University had put together, saying that there's at least seven planets, planet-like structures, I guess, because, you know, even Pluto is not a planet anymore, Chuck, that they feel meet their three criteria for, well, a preliminary possibility of potentially being able to maybe possibly, in some outside chance, maybe with a little help, support life.
If we're right about the fact that they're there, which doesn't seem to be necessarily a lead pipe sin.
That was not one of the three qualifications.
Now, let's just say we were not wrong.
No, that's true.
In fact, our radar was up on this, and it turns out that actually we were right because our radar was up. This is designed a little, as I said yesterday, disingenuously. Because after Barry and I got off the air, I really looked hard at these pictures of these supposed exoplanets, and I found a little disclaimer.
A very little disclaimer
that is, you're basically, they're hoping you will ignore, I think.
That would be called the fine print. Jack.
This is part of the bait and switch operation that I've been talking about. Okay, about halfway down the page, maybe not quite halfway, there's a thing, general characteristics of potential habitable exoplanets. The following section contains more specific information about these exoplanets. The images show artistic representations of each exoplanet based on
nothing.
Complete speculation.
So it's much like, and I know our listeners will be cognizant of this, all of these dinosaur species and everything that sell toys and lots of sci-fi movies, but in reality are artist conceptualizations based upon the finding of a fragment of a tooth, a fossilized piece of skin, possibly, or other things, and they create hulking 75-foot-long, 90-feet-tall, massive flesh-rendering lizards out of them.
Well, if you'll recall, there was a dinosaur once called a Brontosaurus.
Yes, and Bronto was my favorite dinosaur when I was a child. I was so crushed to find out that he was totally falsified.
He was a composite.
He was like the Tooth Fairy. He didn't exist.
Yes, he was a composite. He was a Diplodocus coupled with some other creature because I kept looking at it and saying, the head's awful small.
Well, so what you're basically saying is possibly two smaller animals got into a tussle. One of them tried to kill the other one and they both ended up dead.
You know, if you go to Answers in Genesis, and we'll post a link to that because that's a very important resource. They have debunked some of this stuff to the point where they give you the fact that in some of these dinosaur graveyards, you have animals all kind of ground up into a mishmash.
Sure. When the flood happened, it kind of rolled everything together.
That's it. When the flood happened, it happened.
Have you ever been to a dam? Okay. After a big rain and the river rises or a flood happens, and at the rollers of the dam, you'll find something. And it's this huge mishmash of bits and pieces of logs and trees and people's personal belongings and dead fish and everything else. It's all just kind of crammed together because when a flood comes through, water moves things and then it deposits them in a very convenient location where it takes another route and they stay there.
And dead animals tend to go limp and get kind of twisted into all kinds of different shapes by the forces of the water. And you end up with heads in places where they aren't supposed to be in it. And if you recall, there was a discovery made by a man named Johansson some years ago in Africa, and it was called Lucy.
Ah, yes. Wasn't that supposed to be the missing link?
The missing link, except it turns out now that Lucy is from an extinct sort of side, supposedly.
A subspecies.
A subspecies. How they can tell this, Barry, is just beyond me. It's all
based... Can I go back to the artistic renderings and little Bronte? God rest his soul.
Yes. Well, look, it's all based on morphology.
Yes.
Now, okay, what does that mean? That's a big word, morphology. Body shape.
Yes.
Okay. So, if 50,000 years from now, dogs become extinct, and someone finds a Chihuahua, and then finds a Bull Mastiff, would they, based on morphology...
Evolution.
Exactly.
It's got to be evolution.
Would on morphology they find those to be members of the same species?
No, not based on morphology. There would be that would be like a Siberian Husky and a Pomeranian.
This is the problem that you get into when you don't have DNA to work with. Now,
right.
Recently they've claimed they've come up with some actual Tyrannosaurus Rex DNA. I don't know if you've heard about this or not.
Now, I saw that in Jurassic Park, I think.
Well... They got that. That was interesting how they did that, and it was considered viable at one time, and that was they found a mosquito
trapped in amber
and
was that still had its meal in it.
Well, the Tyrannosaurus Rex that they found was actually inside rock.
Ah.
But soft tissues were still intact. Now, I can...
After how many millions of years?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute, inside rock, and if I remember correctly, most rocks are formed one of three ways, correct? Either by sediment being laid down, by magma cooling, or by heat and pressure.
Heat and pressure. And the fact is that this, I always wondered why this announcement was made, and people bought it right and left, willy-nilly.
Of course it is.
The first thing I heard was, you found soft tissue inside of a rock. How old was the rock? I want to see the...
That's right.
I want to see the...
Carbon dating?
Not carbon.
Remember, carbon dating.
Carbon dating is only good for 25,000 years. I want to see the isotope dates.
There you go.
Isotope dating is supposedly good for, depending on the one you use, and I'm not very
well
versed
for, let me
that.
Do my best Carl Sagan, billions and billions of years.
Yes, billions and billions. Well, the fact is that you can find rocks that are millions and billions, whatever years old, supposedly. And inside, you've got a dinosaur with soft tissue in it from which DNA has been extracted.
Wow.
Supposedly. Well, here's the problem. DNA is very weakly held together. As we talked about last week in the show that you weren't on, we talked about why life is almost impossible to find on the surface of Mars.
Well, that's okay. Even though I wasn't on it, I listened to it.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. You did a great job, by the way.
The fact is that DNA is very weakly held together, and it deteriorates really fast.
So, again, if it's inside rock, if it's sedimentary rock, it would probably have crushed that tissue into a pulp and made it unrecognizable to start with. Good possibility.
Yeah.
If it were done as volcanic rock, well, I'm not sure how many tissues can survive
nothing.
The heat.
No, nothing.
And if it was done as igneous rock, where heat and pressure has to be applied, well, the thing about flesh is that when you put heat and pressure on it, it does two things. It cooks, and then it rots.
Yeah. Generally, you find these kinds of things inside sandstone, which is a sedimentary rock.
Sedimentary, yes.
And that's not a quick method, although it's being proven now to anybody who's paying attention that those sediments get laid down way faster than anybody thought.
Oh, well, take a look at the Mount St. Helens issue.
Exactly.
With the trees that, according to the traditional way of dating sedimentary layers, that tree would have been laid down 20-some thousand years ago, except it was laid down about 4 years ago.
Well, you think about this. In 1980, Mount St. Helens went off. There's already coal forming at the bottom of Spirit Lake.
From
the trees that were standing on the edge of Spirit Lake and got knocked into Spirit Lake.
32 years ago.
They're already doing the work, and coal is already forming. That's not supposed to be able to happen.
Well, no, doesn't that take millions and millions of years, Charles?
That's right, yeah.
Millions and millions. I love that Carl Sagan thing.
Not only that, it takes a lot of pressure, supposedly.
Well, there is a lot of pressure of water. Have you ever been underwater? You feel like you're being crushed. I mean, come on.
A lot more pressure than that.
Well, yes.
But that's my whole point here. The fact is that some of these things are either not as old as they say, or the science that we knew before that is completely wrong.
Well, wait a minute. Well, you're trying to say that the science is wrong? Chuck!
Yes.
How can you say that? Because you realize, don't you, that there are many scientists out there who would say that it's a matter of faith to believe in certain unalterable, unmitigatable truths, such as evolution, such as millions and millions and billions of years,
yeah,
such as apes to man. Those are things, Chuck, that you just can't question in science.
No, because they're dogmatic.
Well, and that's where we're going to today with that, because just as dogmatic as the scientists are about evolution, they're also that dogmatic about astrophysics and astronomy and, well, the habitable exoplanet catalog seems to fall right into that. Because, again, like we said before, the researchers said that they've only got three requirements for putting one of these planets in the catalog, and those three requirements were the variability of the energy from the host star, the mass of the planet, and the planet size. Well, Chuck, I mean, come on. We could make up the same. We could go online, form a web page, if we had a string of letters behind our names with PhD and et cetera behind it, and we could put up, say, well, these are our three criteria for what we think habitable planets are, and we throw them up. Now, it's interesting because there's a lot of wiggle room here, especially in the article that we were talking about yesterday, the possibles and probables and potentials, all the P words. When people start using the P words, ladies and gentlemen, especially talking about science, you know one thing. They don't have hard data. They are guessing.
Yes. They don't know for sure.
They don't know for sure. When you hear possible, probable, or potential, you got a problem.
This is one thing about the scientific method as well. No scientist will ever say, we know this for sure.
Well, of course they won't.
Because absolute knowledge is impossible under the scientific method, and that is because it uses induction. I'm not going to go into the whole long process of why induction can't really prove anything.
Right.
But it can't, because it's based on observation. Induction is always observation. Deduction can produce absolute knowledge, because you basically go on what you already know mm-hmm. and deduce from that.
Well, this is where Christian worldview comes into play,
Charles.
That's
right.
Because, well, and in another article, and this is what we're going to talk about today, and I'm assuming tomorrow, we're going to be talking about an article out of Fox News that was written on December the 7th, and it was an opinion piece. It was from Live Science, which is one that Fox News grabbed up, and it's called Science Versus God. Does progress trump faith? And I guess, Chuck, in one sense, I'm going to answer that last question with a yes. But it's not the yes that science is thinking. The more we learn about God and his creation, the more we have to change our scientific presuppositions.
And that's right.
Not the other way around. However, in modern science, as this article points out, 3 out of 5 scientists do not believe in God. But on the other hand, 2 out of the 5 do.
That's right. That's 40%.
40%. That's
now,
right.
And here's what's interesting about that. Now, we're not going to get as deeply into this as I want to, because we're almost out of time.
Well, we'll save it for tomorrow.
Believe me, we'll pass this over until tomorrow. But the fact is that a lot of those guys who do believe in God, they may not believe in the Christian God.
Well, that's possible as well, because you do have some in the intelligent design movement. And I know some of these guys personally who are, well, Moonies, you know, other non-Christian-based faiths.
Well, a number of them are sort of deistic.
Well, yes.
And the reason they're there is because they see the element of design and they realize that you can't get away from it.
Oh, absolutely.
Everywhere they look, it's there. There's a regularity. There's law. You ask one of them who has come to this conclusion, who has really thought it through to the end point, they said, you can't have law without a lawmaker. And
yes. Material forces don't answer those questions.
Inanimate material forces, non-spiritual, cannot write law.
That's true.
Non-intelligence simply is incapable of creating law. Now, I've actually heard Christians who attempted to explain phenomena as the universe, when it burst into being, wrote all the physical laws.
And that's a neat trick.
Yeah, it's a real neat trick. I said, okay, presuppositional problem.
Yes.
The physical laws were written, and then God burst the universe into being. And I said, first of all, the universe didn't just burst into being according to modern cosmologists. It can't, because that means it came into existence from nothing. Now, these guys are playing scientific calculation games to try to make it look like matter burst into existence from nothing. This is a major problem. This is an article of faith, not an article of science.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. We're out of time, Barry. We're way out of time.
Let's save it. Folks, come back with us tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking more about science and faith, and we're also going to be giving you a little audio clip of what it really takes for a planet to actually be potentially able to be habitable.
That's right. It's far more complex than people think. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.